Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 23rd. I'm Ray Graff. Autumn began yesterday, and as the season changes, we always try to welcome back our buddy News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback to talk about the weather. If you have a question about weather patterns, maybe you're starting to get worried about the winter, which is closing in on us. Even though it's warm and wet outside right now, you want to know about dew point, jet stream, La Nina, El Nino, whatever. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org with your weather question. Now, Reed Kisselback, he got up at 2 o'clock to be on the TV this morning. And you know what? He's tired. So be nice to him, but please call 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's weather day today. Yesterday was seemed to be an early beginning of autumn. Maybe it was right on time. I don't know. Or maybe it was late. Something was odd about it. And I'll tell you what, we're going to talk to News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback about important things like that. Radar Reed is the weekday meteorologist. It was noon, but he was up at 2 a.m., so I don't even know what time he's on anymore. You'll hear him doing weather on this radio station every so often. He joined News Channel 13 in July of 2019 as the weekend meteorologist in the nights. Before that, he was in Utica. He's a Capital Region native, though, and he loves to go to area schools and discuss all the intricacies of meteorology. You have a question for our friend Reed Kisselback? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And as usual, just a reminder, this is not our climate change show. Dan DeLurie will be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll be doing it then. You know, in general, if you stray into that area a little bit, it's okay, but that's not the primary focus of the program. Number here is 800-348-2551. Hello, Reed. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
What's happening over at News Channel 13?
Oh, a lot of stuff. We got a new hour of the morning show now just started.
What time? Now, you're on the mornings now?
No, so I'm just filling in for Christina right now. She's on vacation, which is rightfully earned on her part.
But, okay, so you got up really early. What time are you on the air today?
I was on the air starting at 5, and then we got off air at, 9. Yeah, we got off.
Boy, doesn't morning drive just stink? It just throws your whole day right off.
Sometimes it throws you off. Sometimes it doesn't. The weird part is when you fill in for these shifts, you either wake up exhausted.
Yep.
Or you wake up and you're ready.
And you're exhausted now, right?
Today was I woke up and was ready, but by the time I got to about 9:30, 10, I was like, okay, we're ready for now.
So
it catches up.
Now it's 2:10, and who knows what's going to happen? Do you need coffee or anything?
Oh, I'm good. I can't do coffee. Thank you, though.
You can't do coffee?
No, I don't drink it.
What happened?
That goes back to family things. We actually talked about this today on the morning show.
Yeah.
So growing up, my grandmother was a big coffee drinker, but an avid cigarette person as well.
Oh,
so whenever you go in the house, you had that mix of the smell of cigarettes and coffee. So whenever I sip coffee, I taste cigarettes. I can't do it.
So, okay. What? Did she dip her cigarettes
it's
in your coffee?
It's by association. I don't know. It just works out that way.
It's a little odd, but this is not... psychoanalysis of any kind, and we'll just accept it. 800-348-2551. Reed Kisselback is here, not to talk about coffee and cigarettes, although...
I was going to say, let's see how many phone calls we get on that one. Right?
I mean, I can discuss it for hours, but it's weather today. All right, man, it's been dry. It's been so dry. How dry has it been?
Very dry. Paul and I did a stat the other day, going all the way back to the start of astronomical summer, so June 21st, up through yesterday. And this is for the recorded history from the data that we have going back into the 1870s.
Okay.
Second driest summer on record, and that was 4.75 inches.
We got a little rain today. Maybe some areas got more, but right around the station here, we did not get pounded with rain. When are the floodgates going to open?
Over the course of this week, some of you might get your first floodgate for a long time. Because, I mean, even this past summer, it was the first half of it was a lot of rain, was the most of our rain. And then we had the whole dry stretch for basically 2 months now.
Yeah.
At the station at 13, it did pour for a little while.
Did it really?
We had it. Yep. And so people are going to have that trend today. They'll have it a little bit tomorrow, more so Thursday, though, is the next more promising chance.
Okay.
To get a little bit of some steadier rain.
And while I have you here, I mean, how's the weekend looking, man?
Weekend looks great.
Good.
I'm excited for
it. Good. I'm going to be grilling steaks.
Good. You should. Oh, I feel like, buddy, I should, too.
Yeah, I think you should. Well, boy, we're off to a weird start. Reed Kisselback's our guest today. 800-348-2551. It's weather. You know, the best thing about not having rain in great profusion, I don't think I've had to mow the lawn. We did it yesterday.
Yeah.
That was the first time.
It's been
a month and a half.
It's been a while. I want to say I've skipped probably the last 2 to 3 weeks, and it's been kind of nice to not have to do it.
But you make your wife do it, right?
Oh, no. Go out and do it. We have the dog meter. So every time
the
dog's droppings start to get stuck in the grass, it's time to go out and cut the grass. So that way we can scoop it better.
I see. Yeah. Well, we have that problem too, except that we don't own a dog. And that's another show. Okay. This email came in from somebody. It's Diana. All right. This is Dee in Keene, New Hampshire. I love hearing from Keene, New Hampshire.
Okay.
And Dee, true Dee, is a great person. What's your best short answer for how to describe or define the difference between weather and climate? I hear many folks who confuse the two. I predict you have a solid way to clarify the distinction. True Dee, you're the best.
I love that question.
Yep.
Yeah. Weather, I think the easiest way to describe is the here and now. Climate can be described as the pattern over a longer term. So typically what we do for climate normals for like temperature and things like that is over 10 years. So you have to have a couple years of a pattern in order for you to view it as a climate change.
Right.
I know snowfall, we usually do over terms of average snowfall is 3 decades in a row of snowfall totals.
Right.
Just averaging it out like that.
Interesting. So I'm glad you brought that up. Now, Garrett writes in, as a kid born in the 90s, which is, it's just hurtful. I mean, given how old I am to see, as a kid born in the 90s, I recall winters with much more snow, says Garrett. I have heard New York weather shifting to almost the pattern of Washington State. Any truth to that?
Well, Garrett, as another 90s kid, I also, sorry.
You
sorry,
young Jay. Whippersnappers.
Yeah. I would say, yes, I remember that more, but also I think some of that contextually could be a little bit of our size as kids, too. You remember just huge amounts of snow.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say that didn't happen, because there's definitely more snow. I know even since I've come back and joined the business of broadcast meteorology, the 10-year snowfall average for the season has dropped off by a couple inches twice.
Wow.
Since I've been in the business. So
okay.
It does note that, yes, the snowfall totals are dropping off. Whether we're becoming that of the climate of that of Washington is a little bit too early on that end.
Okay.
Climate is not something I can 100% touch to,
okay.
But I know research-wise, these kinds of decisions usually take several decades for them to determine that part.
Is there a 30-year cycle?
There can be, yeah. It depends, though, too, because there's outside, again, this is getting to the climate part of it a little bit more, but
I know. Here we
that's
go.
When you start to add in some outside factors that can through the 30-year cycle for a little bit more of a loop, and you don't get what you usually would expect in that cycle because of the outside factors.
We are joined today by Reed Kisselback, News Channel 13 meteorologist, who's almost headed for happy nappy time as soon as this show's over. Thank you for doing these the change of every season. The number here is 800-348-2551. All right, let's grab one, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll grab more calls. Let's go to John in Poughkeepsie, Po-town. John, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. Question on the use of the word energy in weather forecasts. I'm not sure what that refers to, whether it's an approaching low or moisture content or wind. A lot of times the weather forecast said approaching energy. What is that?
Great question.
It is a great question, John. I appreciate this one. So sometimes it can be a little bit more contextually based on what we have going on. We only get so much time to talk on air.
Yep.
And so sometimes if it's not really quite an organized system where you'd have a low-pressure system that you can classify it as, you say maybe a little bit of some energy pushing its way on through, which would give you some showers. Other times, it could hint at instability. So like in the summertime when we talk about severe weather, a lot of times you start out the day without any showers, but there's sunshine, there's winds that are changing in the atmosphere, there's a lot of heating and mixing, what we call mixing. So air that's moving up and around and generating the cloud cover that you need, and eventually the rain that would form and those showers and thunderstorms. That took me a long time to describe that. Sometimes you have to abbreviate down to energy, unfortunately, which could cause that confusion on that part. But that is a great question.
Now,
I did like that one.
You know what, John? While you're still here, Reed, if you had your druthers in a half-hour show, how much time would you have? Like 12, 13, 15, 18 minutes?
I think it would vary on what we got going on, right? So, like, all of last week, I felt like I was in San Diego. There wasn't too much that I could talk about.
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't need that much time.
Uh-huh.
But on days like today where there's shower chances and the rest of the week where there's chances for showers, I could fill easily 5-10 minutes of time.
All right.
And just explain it in a much more down-to-earth, detailed way that I can do it.
Give me the number of your boss, and I'm going to see if we can work this out. John, you want to follow up?
So I guess it's just a shorthand term for some change approaching that would be noticeable, either through precipitation or winds or a change in temperature.
Great way to put it, yes.
All right, John, thanks a lot. By the way, before our break here, the number is 800-348-2551. Weather questions today for News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. What's your least? Okay. You know, broadcast entities often have consultants.
Yeah.
And they think they know everything. And they come in, they don't know the market. They come in, they say stuff. What is the weather jargon foist upon you by a consultant that you despise the most?
I think a lot of time it's more so they want us to use phrasing, like certain phrases.
Yeah, that's
where
what
it's
I
like,
mean.
Yeah, where what it's just it? Like, we want you to say tracking a lot. We want you to throw.
Why?
Because
they
know.
Focus grouped it?
I think that's the focus group.
You know what, Dad?
I'm
sick of the corporate mentality. Hey, Zach, let's take a break here because I want to give Reed Kisselback a good talking to. 800-348-2551. It's weather today. We'll be back with more of your calls. Top of the stack, James Brown and the band. Hey, the lockbox is open. The fun drive begins October 6th. It's all day me blabbing at you, asking for money. If you want to shorten the drive, go to WAMC.org right now. Kick in a couple of bucks. There's no minimum to be a member of this radio station. WAMC.org. We're doing great in the lockbox. We could use your help now. If you haven't done it, I thank you in advance. News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback joins us today. And let's see, we'll go to Argyle. Hello, Merle. How you doing? Merle, hello.
Merle,
okay, well, should we call you back?
It's
okay, this is not the best start to a Merle segment. I've got to be honest.
Hello, you there?
Yes, Merle, we're here. Hello.
Hi, Merle.
I had my hand full.
All right,
getting
man. Go ahead.
Wind. You guys don't do wind direction and velocity. I know you cover a big area, but wind makes a big difference where I live. The temperature might be 70, but if the wind's 30 miles an hour, it feels like 30.
That's a heck of a wind chill. All right, so what do you think, Reed?
I mean, so wind, again, this kind of boils down on the time side of things, but also what's going on. So, like, for example, last week where we had a lot of sunny days, not too windy, you don't really mention the wind because it's not really too much of most of the time the wind last week in most locations was at 10 miles an hour or less. So usually that gives you a couple degrees cooler than how it actually is outside, so you wouldn't factor it in all too much. But once the wind becomes more a factor, like when you said 30 miles an hour, usually that's worth mentioning in the broadcast, and we throw that in there.
Right.
As, hey, you're going to go out there, but things are going to be blown away.
Direction of the wind.
Direction, we don't really throw in all too much. We kind of just, if it becomes more of an important factor, we'll mention that a little bit more.
Yeah.
But the direction side of it, typically it's coming from the direction that any showers or storms are coming from as well.
Okay. Merle, does that work for you?
No.
You know what? You're killing me, man. What were you carrying, by the way? What were you carrying when the call started?
Oh, applesauce, feta cheese.
Oh, you were shopping. All right.
Yeah, no, I'm expecting lunch and a Greek salad.
Jeez, Merle, you're eating pretty good, man.
Sounds
well,
great.
Thanks a lot for the thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. Reed Kisselbach is our guest today from News Channel 13. When are you back on the air tomorrow early again?
I am back on the air early tomorrow morning as well, yeah.
So if you left right now, halfway through the show, you'd still only get 5 hours sleep. That's ridiculous.
Maybe. You never know.
That's terrible. Let's go to Del Mar. It's Adam's turn. Adam, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to ask, I used to think that, like the weather and how warm the temperature gets was mostly determined by how close you're located to the equator. But I've also heard that things like elevation and, you know, how close you are to the ocean, that can also, like, determine the temperature. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that. And also, I wanted to ask if you know of any cities, like, in the Northeast that have more mild temperatures, like mild winters.
Okay, like a microclimate.
I've heard some cities in, like, Connecticut have, like, more, like, mild winters. So I was wondering if you knew of any cities.
Sure.
Coastal, right?
Sure. Yeah, a lot of it's the coastal cities just because of that land and sea breeze that you get basically every day.
And the ocean just holds
it. It kind of holds it a little bit longer. Yeah. So typically right on the shoreline, which I'm kind of grateful I don't forecast right on the shoreline, just because if you ever have a snow event in the winter, you go from rain to sleet to snow, and then you have to kind of figure out where that line goes and a slight difference in temperature.
Great chance
as we know.
Of being wrong. And the consultants
can
hate
be
that.
Can be a bit of a headache in some spots like that, for sure. But yeah, temperature can vary quite a bit across the world. At closest to the equator, it's always going to be warmer. That has the most daylight, for sure. But yeah, you mentioned elevation can cool us down quite a bit. Cloud cover over an area can cool us down. And just the way that the winds circulate around the globe helps bring different conditions across our area. Air always wants to move from high pressure to low pressure. So you always get that change in wind.
Yeah.
And with that, you usually get the change in temperature with it as well. So,
Adam, you want to follow up, sir?
Yeah. So do you know of any cities in the – because I know Northeast mostly it's, like, very cold in the winter and stuff. Do you recommend any cities in the Northeast that have, like, more mild winters?
So, I mean, if you are looking for a more mild winter, obviously every season can be have a little bit more of an X factor where you don't get a mild winter. But obviously, any coastal city, like we said, so like New York City, if you're heading into Connecticut, those coastal cities always typically have a more mild winter than someone a little bit farther inland.
Adam, thanks a lot. I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother lived on Hempstead, Long Island. And so we're outside playing around town here in the Albany area. And then we drive down and we get to the island. And this would be February. My brother and I would be running around in T-shirts because just it was so much warmer. The ocean just captured the energy and held it. It's fun.
It's fun to see. I mean, even when I went from growing up here in Albany to moving out to Utica for the 2 years, hour and a half drive makes a huge difference in how much snow you get, which is crazy to see, too. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I believe Santa lives in Utica in the
off-season. If not there, then Syracuse or Rochester.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's go to Seward. Kathy, you're on with News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselbach.
Hello. Having a great day, I hope. I was curious about whether or not you had to change your algorithms for weather prediction because of this climate change?
Good question.
Yeah.
So you don't typically need to change factors too much in a weather forecast algorithm, basically because the algorithms start out with the current conditions in the atmosphere and or assumptions.
Okay.
So every weather model, this is the fun thing that I learned in college where I was like, you got to be kidding me. We don't know what the normal state of the atmosphere is because it's always in a state of fluctuation. So the weather algorithms take these different variables that we have and they go, well, based off of this, if this algorithm says that X is what the normal situation is for the atmosphere, then the end result is Y. But the other one says, well, what if it's Z is your normal? Then your end result is, we'll say, A. Yeah, so when we look at a weather model, what you are seeing on air is the average result. So we'll use the GFS model, for example. There's 52 some odd
different. What's GFS mean?
Global Forecasting. Oh, my gosh.
Service.
4M brain on me on this one. But, yes. So when we have the GFS model, that has 52 different outputs of what the weather could be. And so if 48 of them say it's going to pour here in downtown Albany, we're going to say it's going to pour in downtown Albany because that's the most likely thing to happen. And when you get those outliers of it didn't pour in downtown Albany,
right?
Maybe two of those other outliers said no rain, and the other two said, oh, it's just going to rain in Saratoga instead. That's when the meteorologist busts the forecast and is wrong.
Well,
because the outlier verifies and works out in that case. So you do see those things get tied in just because it's now taking the warmer conditions that you have or colder depending on where the climate is, and then your end result is still put in there.
Does that work for you, Kathy?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good
a
question.
Lot. News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback joins us today. Let's talk about those models, and we've talked about them before.
Yeah.
By the way, the number is 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We always go back to some of the major hurricanes that hit.
Yeah.
And some of the – you have the European forecast. You have this GFS you're talking about. There are – how many models in your quiver?
Oh, ones that we can pull up on air, we have a decent bit that we can use. There's the typical ones that are the big three are the GFS, the NAM, and the European models. So we can pull those up.
Yeah.
We have more short-term models that we can use, too.
What are the advantages of that?
The short-terms?
Yeah.
Are a little bit more so those big three are what we call synoptic scales. So it's large scale patterns. They don't necessarily account for like terrain as well as what a mesoscale model, so some of the short term ones, would account for a little bit better.
Yeah.
So sometimes you can pull up a more shorter term model and you can see it looks way more accurate to what we have going on outside just because it's accounting for the terrain a little bit more. And you can kind of use that in your forecast to adjust it and show it a little bit better of what's most likely to happen.
Is there not enough computing power to do the synoptic in the same way and take into account terrain and everything else?
I would say right now, yeah, probably. I'm sure somewhere down the line we'll get to that point. But right now, synoptic is just, it's too broad.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, if you look at our area, so diverse with terrain and everything.
Right.
The mesoscale is a lot better for us to see. But you can still use it when you do your forecast and you're telling that story. You say, hey, right now the models are hinting at, which are your long-term synoptic models, that there's a chance for some showers on, let's say, tomorrow. And when we get to the mesoscale, when that finally comes into range and we get close enough to the day, then you're starting to see that chance for rain is much more spotty because they also just keep it a broad swath of green, the synoptic ones. When you get to mesoscale, it breaks it apart a little bit more. You can tell a little bit better.
You know, in the old days, really, and I don't know when satellites really became a go-to for meteorologists, but, you know, I've been watching TV around here for a long time, and the weather guys would have their cardboard and their pointers and, you know, and I assume they weren't using satellites. The barometer. How important is it still to you to use a barometer?
Barometer is still an important tool to use. Satellite and radar is kind of like your visual of what's happening, right? Because the barometer is
going to... When did that start, though?
As soon as that technology became available.
Okay.
So
it was before your time.
Probably
basically.
Right around the start of my time, I want to say, on that part of it. Fair enough. But the barometer still is a good tool because it tells you when things are going to change. You see the pressure drop before you actually get the end result that changes things over, whether it's showers, whether it's snow, whether it's,
You know, Superstorm Sandy. And were you in the business then? Or were you like in middle school or something?
Sandy, I want to say, what year was that one? I'm trying to remember.
Off the
top of my head, that was either late high school or early college, I want to say.
You know, there was a big deal about the models. And the models sort of all kind of were, maybe not all of them were wrong, but the one that the consensus
the one
used
outlier.
Was not correct. Have we, and we've talked about this before, funding is so important for computing power. Has the U.S. side, now the European model was kind of a gold standard for a time, have we improved and can we prove it? In other words, can we look at outcomes and say, we nailed this one?
Oh, yeah. You can do any hurricane season now because it used to be, I still even remember this as a kid. Whenever there was a hurricane set to hit the coast, they would evacuate the whole coast.
Yeah.
And now it's down to the point where you can probably evacuate maybe 100 miles of coast.
Yeah.
And so I know that still sounds like a huge, huge gap, but if you think about it, that's a huge drop in size for for accuracy of knowing where something's going to go.
But still, you mentioned this earlier. There are so many variables.
Yeah.
I saw on the weather this morning, very early, this is a tropical storm. I forget. We'll just call it Tropical Storm Josh Landes. And they said, well, it may cause trouble, but mostly it's going to head out to sea. What causes those variables to change?
It's what they use as what is viewed as normal in the atmosphere, certain standards. It could be for us, for example, we had high pressure over our area so much last week that we had a low coming up the coast that it just wouldn't let into our area. So sometimes high pressure can be very strong. It can help to push things away. It can also have to do with the global jet pattern. It could have to do with the sea surface temperatures, how strong the winds are out over the ocean spots. There's a lot of different factors like that that can make it a little bit more varied.
All right, so we're going to go back to the phones in a moment. But since you mentioned water temperature, let's talk La Nina just for a minute.
Yeah.
Where are we with that for the winter?
All signs are indicating right now. It hasn't verified yet that we have it yet, but it shows like we're pointing towards a La Nina for us for the winter.
For those who don't know, explain what that means.
Typically means wetter conditions for us.
What's going on in the ocean?
Going on in the oceans, that means the colder water has to appear off the coast of South America on the coastline there, and it stays a little bit closer to the coast,
right,
which gives us these conditions for our reason.
Okay, so the water is cold. So El Nino is
colder,
warmer
currents. Yeah.
Is it at depth? Or I'm very confused by the La Nina, El Nino.
That starts to turn El Nino, yeah. It starts to turn a little bit more into the oceanographer side of it, I think, with how far deep the water has to go in that part. But I know it's ocean current.
Okay.
And so that, I feel like, has to be a little bit more in depth.
This is not a pop quiz. I'm going to move
on. No, you're all good. You're all good.
Reed Kisselback is our guest today from News Channel 13, and he's been up since 1 o'clock in the morning. And frankly, he doesn't like coffee. You know, I've been trying to get off the coffee, too.
Yeah.
But I've been doing Midday Magazine now last week or so.
So you got to go back on the coffee.
I'm back on the joy juice, man. It's great. Let's go to Leta in Del Mar. You're on. Or is it Leta?
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
My question is a little less technical.
Okay,
when I watch the news and the weather, the guys have the weather map behind you, and you'll say, oh, the temperature in Rensselaer is 67 and Saratoga is 29 and so on and so forth. There is a Saratoga APT on the map. What is that?
APT on the weather
airport?
Map. But most likely, yeah, the
Saratoga
County Regional Airport.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily in Saratoga.
I saw one that said Schenectady, too.
Yes, yeah, those are your regional airports. Yep.
So do you say your name Leta or Leta?
No, Leta. Leta and the Swan?
Leta, I got to tell you something. You should write in to News Channel 13 and say, listen, enough with the abbreviations. You're confusing me. Okay.
I thought of doing it, but then I said, oh, well, they'll laugh at me.
No,
that was a good question.
Thank
I like
you for
it.
The call. I appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Reed Kisselback is our guest today from News Channel 13, and we'll go to Palmer, Massachusetts. Michael, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I was wondering why after the winter solstice, when we start getting more daylight, it keeps getting colder. And on the other hand, in the summer, when we start getting less sunlight, it keeps getting hotter. What determines that?
If we're talking about, are we talking about just like morning lows kind of thing? Or are we talking just in general
No, okay. The old saying goes, as the days get longer, it gets colder. Why is it that after December, say, 21st or 22nd, when we start getting more daylight, it actually keeps getting colder? Intuitively, I would think the more daylight we'd have, the warmer it would get.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So it has to do with, one, it has to do with the winter solstice a little bit. So now the Earth is starting to tilt back to the more daylight hours for us here. But what happens with that is as you're adding more daylight, we have what's called polar vortex up to our north over the North Pole. That makes it a little bit less stable. And so once it does that, it kind of bows down into parts of Canada, occasionally into our region. So you get some of those coldest temperatures in February when you're starting to get those longer days, because that's starting to buckle a little bit more and you get these cold waves that come on through.
There you go. Does that make sense, Michael?
It does. What about the summer?
Summertime, it's kind of the opposite way of what's happening. So you are now getting some shorter days, but the equator is getting a little bit more sunlight. All that warm energy is starting to work its way closer towards our region. And then you get some of the hotter temperatures from that.
What do you think?
Perfect. That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. It's News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Now, we heard from Trudy in Keene, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to hear from Lyle in Keene, New York, who asks, what forces keep the moisture and clouds in a discrete congregation?
Keeps them all tight together?
You have 1 minute.
Oh, that's a good one. All right, let's see if we can damp this one down, right? So a lot of it just has to do with the conditions in place around it. So you'll never get a cloud below a level where the dew point and the temperature are the same. So that could mean that essentially a little bit over away from where a cloud is formed, that they're not quite the same, so you won't have a cloud form in that spot. So that kind of what keeps it congregated in that one spot is because that's where all the same conditions are in place where you could have a cloud form, so you get the cloud form right there.
You know, I go up on the roof and take the air time to time here at the station and look at the clouds. How much does a cloud weigh?
I wouldn't be able to tell you on that one. Yeah.
You know what, Reed? I know it's just because you're tired, but I know you know that answer. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's happy nappy time almost for our friend, News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback. We'll be back and try to wake him up. Ich bin ein Chrom Dinett. That's an old Zappa tune. Sofa number one, as done by the Ed Palermo Big Band here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. You're familiar with sofa number one?
Of course.
No, you're not. No. How about sofa number two? All right, this is from TS. With the upcoming rainfall, what is the most accurate method for measuring the rain? I've often thought about that. How do you measure the rain? I've seen people using all different types of containers to get measurements.
Graduated cylinders are usually the best way to do it. And then you just put it out in an open area, not close to the side of the house, not because that way you're not having interference or something like that that could kind of skew your number a little bit more. That's typically the best way to do it.
All right. Gregory in Hyde Park writes, I appreciate that the meteorologist from News Center 13, News Channel 13, break down their weather forecast by region. That's helpful indeed. I find in general, though, that weather reports coming out of New York City or the Capital District often don't reflect what's going on in the Mid-Hudson region. Are we here in Dutchess and Ulster in some sort of transitional area, or is it my imagination? And that's from Gregory.
You are probably in a little bit more of a transitional area because...
Well, what does that mean?
It's more so you're in kind of in between the two climates, right? You have the climate area of New York City where it's usually a little bit warmer, a little bit more mild, and then Albany where... You usually have the colder temperatures in place like that. And so typically at some point that air mass kind of has to cut off somewhere, which is probably over the Hudson Valley. And that's where you get a little bit more of a skewed answer.
You know, you've been around here, you grew up here, mm-hmm. and you're familiar with this. But if you weren't, would this area be difficult as compared to some other areas?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah?
I feel like being from here has been awesome. And I think talking to other meteorologists in this field out and about whenever I see them, we all agree that it's a challenging area to forecast. So it's good to hear it. And even as a person who grew up here, I still know it's going to be challenging.
I mean, do you ever think about moving to San Diego where it's the same all the time?
Only when I'm ready for a break from all the weather would I consider that one. But
only when the alarm bell goes off at 2 a.m.
Yeah, I'm like, too many alarms at 2 a.m. We're going to go back out of San Diego.
How many do you run?
I do one.
Really?
Yep.
Because I run two most days unless it's like a fun drive, and then I have seven.
I typically, so like on days like this, because I don't do this so much, internally I'm not sleeping as well anyways because I'm like, I got to get up.
Yeah.
Like any little sound, I'm like, oh, that's going to be the alarm. We got to get up. So I know I'm typically good with one.
Yeah.
But there's other days where I'll have two, more so like a half hour later just in case, but I always am up on the first alarm.
What's Cayano up to, like 12 now at this point?
I don't know.
No?
That's a question for him.
Yeah,
depends on what he's been up to.
You know, you got to ask him how many
alarms. He's a busy man.
Oh, absolutely. Mark in Schenectady writes, does AI play much of a role in your daily forecasts?
For me, no, not yet. I think there's a lot that's being explored with AI and how it can improve forecasting. And so I think we'll see that come into play, maybe not immediately, but a little bit farther down the line.
All right, one more email, and then we'll go back to the phones with News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselbeck. Peter in Barryville writes, sometimes when I check the radar for rain, the computer screen shows it's raining in my location. However, it's actually sunny outside when I look out the window. Why is this?
If we're going with the radar part itself, sometimes that could be what's called, it can just show moisture in the atmosphere because that's what the radar is detecting. So a lot of the time, like even this morning, radar was green in a lot of spots, but I knew it was what we call as virga. So it's rain that's falling but evaporating before it hits the ground.
Interesting.
He has a lot of sunshine, so might not quite be where they are just yet, but that's typically what it is. When you see the green and it's not really falling on you,
yeah.
If we've had really dry weather, kind of like what we have had, you get what we call virga.
So there is moisture there. It's just not hitting the ground.
Yep.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Reed Kisselbeck is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Warwick, New York. Barry, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question and a potential theoretical answer. I would like you to verify or correct me as need be.
I love this.
I've That's noticed good. That I've thought about this a long time. I've noticed that when the sun comes up, sometimes I'm up early. When the sun comes up, you know, that's a heat source. You would think that my outdoor temperature sensors would simply begin to rise. But sometimes in the early morning hours, once the sun is peeking over the horizon, the temperatures go down before they go up. And they do go up in short order, but they go down first. I'm wondering why this is. And my theory is that when the sun comes up, it begins to set in motion some thermals, which just changes the temperatures at the surface for a little while. And that's why, you know, upper atmosphere air is coming down. Hence, thermometers are going down. Once that all settles out and the sun is up, the reverse happens and the temperatures go up as expected. How did I do?
That was spot on.
Really?
Barry. That was a good job. Yeah. Yeah. It takes the longest amount of time for the temperatures to drop. So you think about on a night where we have cool, clear skies, nice, clear skies, you often get those really cold morning lows. And essentially, it's just all that air is just leaving off the ground. We're cooling off quickly. And it takes a minute for the sun's light to make its way back to the ground for us to warm up. So often what you see is even though the sun rises, you're still cooling off by a couple more degrees before it actually starts to warm you back up.
Barry, good answer.
Good answer, Barry.
So do you want to be on the show next time?
Thank you.
All right.
I'm a bass player, so you have to expect
Oh,
that.
My gosh. I knew it. And you're always in tune, man. And you show up early for the gigs, which is very rare. Barry, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. Fran and Gallatin, our regular correspondent, writes, are the weather predictions in the World Almanac ever accurate?
Oh, in the Farmer's Almanac?
Well, I don't know if she says the World Almanac.
World Almanac?
But let's do the Farmer's Almanac, too.
I feel so what those ones are, they have their own equations that they like to use, but a lot of the time they're just looking at the average.
Yeah.
And they're saying, based off the average, this is what your forecast is for this year. And
yeah.
Based off of what's happened in previous years, what's happened the following year is usually this, so this is your forecast. I feel like every once in a while, sure, that probably could pop up as okay.
Yeah.
But most of the time, most likely not. Yeah.
So, you know, Bob Berman, who's an astronomer who's on the show, and he was on a couple weeks ago, and he's the astronomy editor for the Old Farmer's Almanac. And he is like, I don't know how you'd predict what the weather's going to be in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's the same thing if you go to, like, AccuWeather's website and they have a 90-day forecast. I'm like, how do you come up with this? But, yeah.
Well, that's not a good strategy. I'm sure the consultant says, hey, Reed, go out 3 weeks, and I'm sure you'll be right.
And I'll say politely decline that.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. The number here is 800-348-2551. Rick writes in, speaking of clouds, can certain clouds only appear at certain altitudes? And as a test, can you name all of the cloud formations?
Name all the cloud formations that we have?
That's kind of tough.
I can give you the four big ones that we have.
Nimbus.
So you have
Cumulus.
Cumulus is the big one.
Cirrus,
which is the thin and feathery one.
Stratus
are the big ones. Stratus is kind of like the blanket over the sky. cumulus or the poofy ones that look kind of like cotton balls.
Yeah, friendly
and then
cumulus.
The ones I always say that's the big one is cumulonimbus.
That's the
thunder.
That's
the one that you see for a thunderstorm. Those are your four big ones that you usually
see. Okay,
and then for in regards to layering, you can see stratus and cumulus in the lower and mid levels of the atmosphere. And then you see cirrus in the high
cirrus
up levels
fan.
Of it.
I'm a cirrus fan. Cirrus How fan. High are the cirrus?
They're in the higher. They're in the highest levels of the troposphere. So getting closer to the top part before you get into the stratosphere. So,
I'm sure they've measured this or measured occasionally. What's the highest cloud top that has ever been recorded?
Oh, I wouldn't know the answer to that one, but that's
you know
a
what?
Good question.
All right, so
I'd like to learn that one, honestly.
I
That'd
think
be
we're giving
one.
You a lot of homework for the
yeah.
next time.
It's yeah, you
like
are.
3 months. Let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And, all right, I'll go to Dottie in Newburgh because she's been waiting longest, but we just answered this question. Dottie, do you have another question for Reed Kisselbach?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I was wondering, I have a small dog, and he seems to feel the pressure change way before you hear any thunder or when it's going to rain.
Yeah.
He just gets very, very nervous and everything. And is it because he's feeling the pressure? He pants and everything.
I believe it.
That's a good. I feel like that's probably a thing. I feel like it's always the same thing right around. I'm not a vet, so I don't 100% know the answer to this one. But even if you think back to whenever we've had, hear the stories about tsunamis coming and it goes quiet and all the animals are moving inland.
Yeah.
It's like they know that something is coming before it gets here. So I would be inclined to agree with you on that they can kind of sense the change in pressure and know that something's coming.
And I think people can too. I know that my arm used to kill me. I banged up my arm years ago.
Yeah.
And my elbow and shoulder and wrist would all hurt about 2 hours before the rain came.
They say that, so like that one's still up in the air on confirmation.
Oh, no, it's true. It's,
I know.
True.
Some people have it, some people don't.
Confirming it, man.
But I agree with you on that. That's one that pops up.
All right, Dottie, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number. And let's go to Chris in Athol, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. A couple years ago, I was hiking out in the middle of northwest Massachusetts, and I came across a weather balloon that had been launched from Albany.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just curious as to what, in this high-tech world, what role the weather balloons play.
Love it.
Do they provide any of the information to you at your level, or is it something that the National Weather Service compiles? And in addition, back during COVID, when all the airlines were shut down, I heard that commercial airlines also have sensors that will transmit data to the National Weather Service. Can you comment on the balloons in the commercial airlines? And I'll hang up and listen.
Chris, thanks a lot. Great work.
Great question, Chris. I'll comment quickly on the airline one first. I can't confirm that one. I do not know on
that.
I've
never heard
of that. I feel
like
certain government planes might have that sensory that they can send that information back. But in regards to weather balloon data is some of the most important data you can get because it is real-time ground truth observation. And so they're honestly we use them in our office, the Weather Service uses them. When we talked about, earlier in the show here, weather models and how they take the current conditions, and that's the data that they're using is from the weather balloons.
Short range models,
any of those models will use it.
Really?
So it's, here's the current conditions in this area. If this is what the atmosphere is like at normal, then based off of these current conditions, your end result will be this. And so that's some of the most important things ever. And that's why it's important, too, when we have, like, hurricanes, getting the drop zones when they drop the instruments into the hurricane, too. That gives you the ground truth, gives you a more accurate forecast.
Interesting.
So weather balloon data, that is some of the most important stuff you can get.
Speaking of hurricanes, can you imagine, would you, and I know Cayano's a tornado chaser,
yeah.
Okay, but would you, Reed Kisselbach, go in one of those planes that fly into the eye of a hurricane?
Absolutely.
Really? Have you done it?
No, I want to. I keep calling every time because they do media flights if you can, but they do it based off geography. So I'm at a little bit of a disadvantage here.
Right. There's no hurricane over Scaticoke at the
moment.
No. Right.
No. And so anytime they do come a little bit closer, I'll always call and just go, hey, any chance?
Yeah.
And they'll go, we'll let you know, but chances are for you, probably not.
Can I ask you a question?
So yeah.
Why?
Why? I feel like you only live life once, and
really?
There's a lot of times for some unique opportunities.
Yeah.
And I'm not one who likes to feel regret for passing up on such a unique opportunities. If it's in front of me, I want to at least say that I've tried it. Will I go a second time? Most likely not.
You know what else?
But I feel like I got to try it at least once.
You know what else you always do once? Die. That's the other thing that you do. Let's go to Rudy in Kinderhook. Rudy, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm asking about a forecaster that worked at Channel 13 back in the late 70s and early 80s. His name was Norm Sebastian.
Oh, Norm. Okay.
Yeah, he was extremely accurate. He didn't use models from around the world. He used his knowledge that he learned at school. He predicted a storm 7 weeks out using lows and jet streams that was forming in the Gulf. And I predicted it so accurately that when I got up to the capital district, we were plummeted with mountains of snow. I just wondered, how much do you rely on your training as a meteorologist, as Norm did on his?
Okay.
It's a good question.
Yeah, sure.
I think I can answer this for every meteorologist. A lot of it is we use that our knowledge every day.
Right.
When we look at the models, we know that there's error, and our job is to try to adjust the forecast to better reflect what we know is more likely to happen in those circumstances. So for that, all those college courses that we took, all that knowledge has to get used and thrown in there to try to give the most accurate forecast that we can.
Okay, Rudy, thanks a lot. I mean, Norm Sebastian, obviously.
Norm Sebastian is a legend. I respect, always loved watching him.
7 weeks? I mean, seven weeks? I don't know, man.
That's before my time on that question, on that part of it. But I know he was really good, and I do give him a lot of props.
And he was great.
He still talked very highly in our station. There's pictures of him in there, and
I mean, I've hit a couple jackpots on a slot machine, you know? I don't know. All right, so this email from a cloud fancier. We've had a lot of cloud questions today.
Okay.
Speaking of clouds, Reed, this cloud spotting fan wants to know, what types are most compelling to you and why? And do you have a favorite place in the Northeast to watch that show?
Okay. So that's a good question. That is a good one. So my favorite kind of cloud, and people are going to be annoyed with me for this one, because they're called Kelvin Helmholtz clouds.
All right.
When you get into the weather side of it,
list earlier.
No, it was not on the list. But these ones are very rare. So you'll see these sometimes if you're out flying in an airplane, but they look like a couple of waves in motion. So they're very cool. Like when you see them, they're very rare.
I saw it up when I was taking the air, months ago up on the roof here.
Very, very rare. You don't see them a lot, but when you see them, I always think they're so cool to see. So I always like seeing those. Some that they call are noctilucent clouds. So it's a little bit kind of like it's a cirrus cloud, but it's got a little bit more of a rainbow.
Yeah,
so those ones are pretty cool to see. Those ones are very rare.
Are they really?
Yeah, iridescent clouds are kind of like what we were talking about. Like that noctilucent's more of a polar cloud.
Yep.
So you wouldn't see it unless if you're closer to the Arctic. So
what's the phenomenon at play there?
The phenomenon at play is those are high-altitude clouds. With those, it's much colder up there. And you have a lot of ice crystals in the clouds. So you're getting kind of like what happens with rain and a rainbow. You get the light reflected and refracted, giving you that little bit of a rainbowish color to
it. Is that similar to the ring around the moon?
Yes. Yep. Same thing with that. And also around the sun, too, you get the sun dog as well.
All right. Very quickly, we only have about 20 seconds here, but let's just go to Chris in Altona. Chris, you only have a very brief amount of time. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I wanted to know, with the lack of money from the federal government, how do you get your source? Does that affect your daily reporting?
Chris, we're going to let you go. You listen on the radio.
Good question, Chris. So with the cutbacks, it is a little bit more challenging at times, but the effects are still a little bit more up in the air, because I've noticed even at Albany, when they first did it, they cut back on doing some balloon launches. But every time they knew something big was coming, they made those launches. And so I know now, too, in lieu of events in Texas, Weather Service is going to be hiring back a lot more staff.
That's very good.
So it's a matter of figuring out what happens from there, how much more staffing you get back, and what we can do from there.
Reed Kisselback, when are you on the air tomorrow on News Channel 13?
I will be on for the morning show from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. on Channel 13, and then 7 to 8 out on my four.
Well, thanks for being here, man. And, you know, it's time for sleep, right?
Naps are great.
All right, buddy. Support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live at age gracefully with dignity and respect. DaughtersofSarah.org. Bonham and Douglas Architects, an architecture and interior design studio, designing education facilities, including Deerfield Academy's dining hall, bd-arc.com. And, turning the page, Agricultural Stewardship Association, presenting their 24th annual Landscapes for Land's Sake art exhibit to benefit local farmland protection, October 11th and 12th, and online October 13th through November 15th, landscapesforlandsake.com. Thanks again to News Channel 13 meteorologist Reed Kisselback for being here. He'll be back at the next turn of the season. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Andrea Leong screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets und Vets. We'll see you, too.